Blog Talk Radio.
Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. How about it? Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Surely, ain't it the truth? Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. You are at the right place at the right time. And I thank you for taking the time out to tune in to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out on Thursday evenings, about this time, we bring you news and information that's gathered from around the country, sometimes even overseas and around the world. It's news intended to inspire and empower and encourage you and hopefully instill you to be involved and take some action. It's news we like to say you can use. So, each week, we have a topic or subject matter that we delve into. Typically, we have some person who has taken it upon him or herself to dig deeper into that subject matter, usually a subject matter expert on the topic, and we walk away with deliverables, things that we truly can use to make a difference with that particular information. This evening is no exception, I'm so pleased to say. But before I go into it, I'll just leave my carrot out there like I like to do as I reflect on tonight's program. This is Black History Month, as everyone on this particular network should know that's listening. And we've had some very enlightening programs this month. Of course, on Progressive News Weekly, every week of every month is Black History Month in effect. Although we don't always have topics specifically geared towards African Americans, it's information that African Americans can truly use to empower and inspire and encourage themselves to aspire to greater and bigger things. If you are not on the mail list for Progressive News Weekly, I encourage you to send me an email to Daryl, that's DARRYL_CLA18@MSN.com, so I can add you on. Because if you are on the mail list, then you probably received an email this evening, if you use mail, email, that informed you of who our guests are tonight and what our subject matter is. So with that said, those of you who are, you know who our guests are tonight. And I'm looking so very forward to it. We start off with a gentleman that's near and dear to me, colleague and a partner of sorts. He is a member of Frontiers International, and that's a civic and community organization that's, well, I don't want to take any of the wind out of his sails because he's a bit more versed than I. He's been in the organization a lot longer than I have. But he's a leader in the organization, and the organization does many things to empower the Black community. I'm going to talk a little bit about a most recent endeavor that the organization is going into. And he's also going to talk a little bit about the organization. And then we follow Mr. John Brinkley of the Frontiers International with Dr. Eddie Taylor. And for those of you who've listened to me over the many years, this is our 9th year. We'll be going into our 10th year. I'm so pleased and proud and honored to say, because I wouldn't be saying that if it weren't for most of you who are listening now, my regular listeners. And please, with that said, do share Progressive News Weekly. There aren't many radio programs of this nature. And we, those of you who understand the nature of this programming, can appreciate the importance of it. So do share. If you haven't brought someone new to this airwave, take an introspective. Because of the things that we talk about, you can go back in the archives for several years and see some of the things that we've talked about by date and topic. You just go to blogtalkradio.com/Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D. If you send me an email, I'll send you the information personally. And you can see some of the subject matter and some of the guests that we've had. So with that said, Dr. Eddie Taylor has been a guest many, many times over the years past. He's an author, a psychologist, an educator, and truly a community advocate. And he's going to talk about a model that he has created that's outlined, in fact, in his latest book, which is called The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revitalization of Black America. Well, that title doesn't give you an idea. Hold on to your seat belts and your seats, because he's going to really bring some information that you're going to find enlightening. So with all of that said, I would like to bring to the airwaves, as I said, someone that I have a lot of respect for and helps keep me grounded from time to time. And he's going to talk a little bit similar to what Dr. Eddie Taylor speaks of, and that's the importance of our historically Black organizations and effort that our organization is endeavoring into. So with that said, Mr. Brinkley, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me well?
Hear you clear as a bell.
Great.
So before we go into some of the things that the organization Frontiers International are doing, could you just give a 100,000-foot overview? We've had many of our members, you know, presidents of past and present, actually, Mr. Lewis Slade was on a month or so ago from Frontiers, giving some of that information. But for those of you who are listening and are not familiar, I'd like for John to just give an overview of what Frontiers International is about.
Okay. Frontiers International is a national organization. It's dedicated to service, community service particularly. It was founded in 1936 in Columbus, Ohio, by Nimrod Allen, who was a member of the United Way at that time. But he felt that there needed to be some fellowship and local people dealing with local issues. The core effort with the Frontiers is local. It's made up of many clubs, and they are, but the strength of the club, of the organization, is local. We believe in leadership, fellowship, and service. In our organizations particularly, we have, it's an organization of leaders, so we elect a leader, our chair, every year, but no one serves more than 2 or 3 years because each member has some burning issues and leadership qualities that we like to support. So we have a rotation of leadership every 2 to 3 years. Our local club, our emphasis over the years had been in support of our youth, support of our businesses, and support of our educational system. We are supplemental to them. We don't try and do more than can be done in the class, but we like to supplement what is done in the class. We've had business seminars where we brought in folks who are expert in some area of financing, organizational development, in order to ensure that the businesses, local businesses, are as effective as possible. What we've been doing over the last 2 years, other than I think you had Michael Pine, who's a long-standing member and chair of our Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Breakfast. We just had our 41st with a dynamic speaker who I know you've had on your air a number of times, Larry Hamm. You know, spoke, fired up the crowd, and I think we're going to build on some of the things that he laid out during his presentation. But we have the longest running tribute to Dr. King with our memorial breakfast, the longest tribute in New Jersey of its kind. So we're proud of that. But 2 years ago, in 2015, we started our Westry Horn Cultural and Heritage Series. Westry Horn was one of the founding members of the Frontiers back in 1961 here in Plainfield. And but we have members not only in Plainfield, New Jersey, but in the surrounding areas. And so the purpose of this series was to what Dr. Jeffries calls community education. It was to educate and provide space for the dialogues, intergenerational dialogues, on topics of African-American history and culture. We believe in intergenerational dialogues because, as you can see, although we've made progress, there are things, challenges that still need to be addressed. And the more things change, the more they stay the same. So it's important that the youth who are on the front line decades ago can share the wisdom with the youth who are on the front line right now. It's not saying that one generation has to dominate. It's saying that we need to share each other's experiences and learn and be able to be more effective by sharing information, both what is currently happening and what has happened in the past and what was successful in the past. So we've had a series of lectures. In 2015, we had a number of lectures, including Why Study African American History with Dr. Akil Kalafani and William Bill Payne, who was a former state assemblyman, who was the author of the Amistad curriculum, which mandates that schools should have a curriculum that deals with African-American history, not only during Black History Month, but it should be infused all throughout the year and all throughout the curriculum. So that was very good. But we've had a number of things, cultural expressions. We like to celebrate Women's History Month. We've had this sister, Christine Dixon, who really channels Harriet Tubman. And she did a wonderful job in terms of getting people involved. She actually had you on the Underground Railroad and very interactive with the audiences. But there's quite a number of things. I don't want to go into all of them, but we've had members of the UNIA, Marcus Garvey's organization, which is still active and active and doing great things, come and speak. And quite a few other things about the economics, Black economics. You see, it's the Black economics. But we also had, this is the year, 2017 is the 50th anniversary of the Plainfield Rebellion. So late last year, we had a lecture and a panel of folks who were there, speak about that. And this Saturday, what we're doing is highlighting Black organizations. This Saturday, February 25th, we're having our first forum of the year, and we are interested in Black organizations on a national basis, but also how they're manifested here on a local basis. So we have the Pan-Hellenic organizations, the fraternities and sororities represented. We have service organizations, such as the Frontiers, which is a service club, civic organizations, National Council of Negro Women, the Civic Formation Organization. We have religious organizations being represented, social, Masonic. We're bringing all these organizations together so that they can share their history, what their challenges are, and what kind of projects they are currently working on in order to service our community and to move us forward. So we're looking forward to a great event. Most of our events are held at the Washington Community School, which is 427 Darrell Avenue in Plainfield. And it goes from 1 to 4. It's free. There'll be refreshments, and we're hoping for a good turnout and good interaction between not only the panelists but the people who, although they may not be sitting up there representing the organization, I'm sure we'll have people who have organizations in the audience, and they'll have an opportunity to speak about what they're doing also.
Wow, that's quite a bit that's going on. It's interesting, John, that we've decided to do this. And I say that in light of the effort that I've been working toward with our next guest. I hope you'll be able to stay on. And I know your time is limited, comes on. And he's a black psychologist and an author. He's written several books. I mentioned one earlier in the program, The Day the Crabs Got Out. And he's worked a model discussing the plight of black America. And he has spelled out that one of the important efforts that have to take place in order for that revitalization to take place, and that's the subtitle of the book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revitalization or Revival of Black America, is for traditional and non-traditional black grassroots civic community organizations, religious organizations, spiritually based organizations, have to take the stand that they did and beyond what they did back in the 50s and 60s. And so it's interesting that this is happening. And what we've discussed is having a series of panel discussions, similar to what you're talking about. So perhaps we can even collaborate with Dr. Taylor with our Frontiers organization in this effort. It's something we've been working on for almost a year now. But it's very interesting that, you know, the effort that the Frontiers are doing now to have these kinds of discussions, you know, it's just so critical that we have this open, critically honest dialogue with one another, not just to share information, but to challenge one another to even higher aspirations based on the potential that these organizations have and in light of their mission and their traditional efforts that they've done over the decades. Many of these organizations, if not most, are, you know, minimally decades old. So I would say that I'm really looking forward to this weekend. And again, it's at the Washington Elementary School in Plainfield, New Jersey, which is 427 Darrow Avenue. And this is a nationally based radio program, and I would encourage wherever you are to, you know, indulge in such efforts. You know, where we are now in our society, and this isn't just about the new president. I mean, this isn't the first president that has been somewhat controversial. I'm hearing a lot of things centered around, and frankly, I've said this, and I'm not going to go on a soapbox on it. I've done that enough in the weeks and months past. But I think we're putting a little bit too much emphasis there. I think we need to start thinking about what we're doing, not what that person is doing, and maybe what we're not doing and what we need to be doing. So I look at it as something that can be a catalyst that's much needed, because I do believe, and I've said this for years again, that collectively we could be doing a lot more for ourselves as an African-American nation. That's not to disclude our, you know, Asian and Latino and even our, you know, Caucasian brothers and sisters, but we need to have a black agenda. It's just plain and simple. And again, not to disclude that, but we need to have a critically focused black agenda. And so I'm not hating on anybody. I love my Latino and Irish and Italian and Asian brothers and sisters and Hindu brothers and sisters, because they have their own agenda. And yes, we have some commonalities. We're often lumped with our Latino brothers and sisters, and that's not a bad thing. But we do have to have a black agenda, because there's a definite overlap. But it's an overlap. Right. Let's not get it mixed up. It's an overlap. You want to speak on that, John?
Yeah, I remember when Jesse put together his Rainbow Coalition, and I also am reminded of what Mayor Dinkins said. We may have come over on different boats, but we're in the same one now, you know. And so we all have different things we can contribute from our heritage, and that's should be one of the the benefits of being in the U.S. is that of its diversity, and but you need to have real empowered diversity, each contributing the best that they have, and to contribute your best, you need to know your history, you need to know your culture, you need to have it supported and empowered so that you can bring the best. You know, you can have the best restaurants, the best cultural events, the best intellectuals, you know, coming out of your culture, but they need to that needs to be nurtured. That needs to be nurtured from when you're young. It needs to be supported on through your development. You need to not be intimidated, not to be the best you can be. You know, standing solidly on your history and on your culture, and I think that would make the U.S. An even greater country. You know, I'm a student of Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and Dr. Jeffries, so I know the richness of our history. You know, my wife and I, we lived a couple of years over in Ethiopia, the ancient kingdom, you know, Haile Selassie, and you know, which is really Ethiopia is the cradle of civilization, the first known man, you know, came out of Ethiopia. So we have a rich heritage. We should be proud of it. We should know of it. We should research it and let it be manifested. Now, one thing I did want to suggest that we do have a Facebook page, and there is information on there about, you know, this Saturday's event and previous events that we've had, but people who want to know more about what the Frontiers is about can go to Frontiers International Plainville Area Club to get more information about the what we're doing and what we have done.
That's Frontiers International Plainfield Club.
Yeah, Plainville Area Club. If you just put a search on Frontiers International Plainfield, that will come up. But it's Frontiers International Plainfield Area Club.
Area, that's right, Area Club. Wow, John, this has been really enlightening. We need to have you come back more often. We need to have more exposure for the work that, you know, the Frontiers are doing and other organizations. As I said, this is a national radio program, and so we have listeners. I'm looking at a lot of callers coming in from around the country, Texas and New York and Chicago, Illinois and Ohio. So we have listeners from around the country, and I would encourage you, if you Texas, we have organizations out there that are doing things. Drop me an email. We'd like to give it some highlight. We'd like to give it some airtime. Because that's what this is all about. Let's utilize the forum while we have it. You know, I don't intend to go anywhere, but, you know, we just don't know. I was off the air for a little bit, several months last year. And I know there are numerous shows, but there's more conservative shows by a factor of about two than you have more. And I don't like to use the term liberal and left-wing, right-wing, because, you know, when you start getting into that, you're getting into politics, and from my perspective, it's all the same bird. We need to, bottom line, have our own agenda. But with that said, I see the lines are lighting up here. We have questions. We have Dr. Taylor in the studio, but we're going to extend the program a little bit tonight. Thank God I have that flexibility, because we don't shortchange. That's another beautiful thing about Progressive News Weekly. We have news, we bring it, and if we have to extend, we will, and if we have to go into a series, we'll do that too. I'd like to give everyone an opportunity to call in and participate in this dialogue as we as we bring Dr. Taylor on. The dial-in number, if you didn't dial in and you came in through your computers, either way, to participate is 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. If you dialed that number to get in, if you would press 1 now, myself or our studio engineer Cecil will pick up and give you an opportunity to participate, share what you have or ask a question related to the subject matter. We have a few listeners and one that's been on for quite a while that has a question. Would you be willing to take a question, John? I believe someone would like to perhaps have a comment or a question. Is
sure.
that something?
No problem.
Let's see. Is there someone here? We have a 878 number, 908-878.
Yeah, okay. How you doing? It's Brunel. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Brunel. Oh,
yeah, how you doing? Yeah, great show. Great show. I got in a little late. But yeah, I just wanted to say that I was at the Martin Luther King breakfast that was given by the Frontiers International. It was a great event, and it just shows why a banquet is needed, because there was so much information that we learned from that banquet alone about the Frontiers, about how it got started, the four founders, and the different things that you guys do and everything. And then when Mr. Ham spoke about Miss Willa Cofield and all the people that you recognize in the city, I just looked at Mr. Brinkley and yourself, Mr. Clark, in a different light, because I had no idea that you guys did so much, and I didn't know the rich tradition of this program and the fact that it was the longest running Martin Luther King breakfast in Jersey and one of the longest in the country, and how so many people right from our town had made such great contributions to the civil rights movement right from this very town. And it also was sad to see that so little is being contributed, you know, from the younger generation nowadays. So I would just like to ask Mr. Brinkley, how do you think that we can help wake the younger generation to take the baton from your generation and to walk it forward going to the future?
Well, that's a great question, and I think most older organizations address that in different ways. The way we're addressing it is through our intergenerational dialogues. We really emphasize bringing youth and particularly those who are active, who have organizations, who are interested in addressing the challenges of our community, and also those who just don't know, who need to be educated as to what's going on and what had been going on, and different ways of addressing it. So it's important that we listen to one another. You know, people of my generations, you know, I was down at the march in 63 when Dr. King spoke, went down with my church. I was down with the Million Man March when went with the POP, People's Organizations for Progress. And those were tremendous events. We need to listen to each other. That's the main thing. Is there are historic things that happened in the past, great movements, great organizations, but today's need. And one thing Larry pointed out is how young people were. Martin Luther King was only 26 years old when he started the Montgomery bus boycott. And he was, both he and Malcolm were assassinated when they were only 39 years old. You know, the youth have the energy, the elders have the wisdom, and we need to share. We need to balance each other by sharing what we're looking at today and how those things, what we can pull from the past. You know, the Sankofa bird, you know, you move forward by also understanding where you came from. So we do it through intergenerational dialogues, having a particular topic, a speaker or a panel, and then having youth and elders present to discuss their different perspectives. So we both learn and we both share.
All right, thank you.
I can go on, but I thought I'll leave space for others.
I just want to say that, you know, brothers like you and Mr. Clark, I'm 42, so I'm your son's age. You know, I graduated high school, son, but I you know, you guys have even revitalized, you know, me, and with the rich history and the forward movement that you guys are doing at your ages has also lit a fire underneath me, saying that, you know, that there's still more to do. There's still more work to do for myself, you know, because people regard me as doing a lot in the community, but there's still more to be done, you know. And so I just appreciate you guys, you know, holding that torch up, because there's brothers like myself and even brothers younger than me that are looking up to it and watching you guys and still trying to push forward and still trying to make this community just blend our community together and bring our community together and everything. Just hopping on what Mr. Clark was saying about we need to get together economically, you know, I want to put a challenge out there to our people. Like let's put a 60-day challenge of everything that you buy. You know, you take a picture and you note it. Everything you buy has to be something from the black community. You know, it has to be, you know, black dollars, you know. And let's put that challenge out there and let's see how long we can do it and how it will benefit our community, you know. You know, of course, there's some things that there's no way we can get from our community because we just don't have anybody that owns, you know, those types of things. But maybe something like that, if we put like a hashtag with it.
Can I kind of dovetail on that? Because Dr. Ron Daniels gave a State of the Black World Conference in New York. In Newark at the Robert Treat in November after the election, and there were I attended the economic. It was very very broad, very diverse. He covered a lot of areas. I focus on economics, and I attended a number of the economic workshops. There are two websites I suggest people go to, and one is Let's Buy Black 365. .com, and the other one is usliftingus.org. Those are two websites that Let's Buy Black 365.com is, if you know an African American black business and you're really satisfied with it, you can join and put that, add that to the website, so people will know across the country our black businesses. Us Lifting Us is an organization that provides funding and support for black initiatives. So those are two websites that I encourage people to go to and see what's out there, because sometimes we get isolated and think that there's nothing going on. But when you start to go out, go to different conferences, go to different networking sessions, you'll find that there are folks who are struggling, and a number of organizations and individuals have actually come up with answers and solutions. So,
Speaking of answers and solutions, I'm going to intervene and bring Dr. Taylor into the conversation. John, that was excellent information, and I'd like to thank the caller, Officer Harrison, who has been a frequent participant with Progressive News Weekly. We appreciate you for being active and being involved, especially being of the younger generation. You're not 20 or 22, but you're of that age, and I'm not going to put you're not in your, 50s or late 40s, you're relatively young, Officer Brunell, and so, I just encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. But to get
He's
back
a role
to
model, incidentally, in our community.
Yes, Officer Harrison is a role model. He's an officer, a police officer, and he does a lot of many things, mentoring youth. So, Officer Harrison, thank you again for calling in, and you're almost due, for coming back and doing another segment with us. But thanks again, Officer Harrison, for calling in.
Thank you, sir.
But I wanted to segue here with our guest, Dr. Eddie Taylor. And Dr. Taylor's been on many times. He's truly a partner and a friend of Progressive News, and a colleague and a friend and a mentor of mine. Personally, and what we've been discussing at least a year is something similar to what our Frontiers organization locally here is doing, and that is highlighting our black organizations. And he's done an actual model of this in his most recent book, and I'm going to bring Dr. Taylor in and ask if he would kind of just give a high level perspective of that model that I'm referring to, and the importance of black organizations. And the book, again, is The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. That's his most recent book. But the book before that, which I love, Restoring the Mind of Black America, was a prelude to that. But Dr. Taylor, I'd like to bring you to the airways, and I'm extending this program. So those who are just tuning in, you lucked up. Hopefully Dr. Taylor can join us, give us a little extra time, because I know he was scheduled for about 7 o'clock. But Dr. Taylor, welcome again to Progressive News Weekly. For those who don't know Dr. Taylor, he is so busy. He's an activist, an author, a psychologist, an educator, truly an advocate, especially in our black community. Dr. Taylor, give us a highlight. Pick up on some of this conversation that you've heard, and the momentum behind your most recent efforts.
Yes, sir. First of all, Darrell, thank you so much for having me on the on your show again. I really appreciate any opportunity to be on your program. I'm honored, and also John Brinkley, I am inspired and encouraged by what Frontiers International is doing and has been doing. I actually looked at your website and all the wonderful things that you all are doing on behalf of Black America. Just some information about the things that I put together, put it in the book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, is looking at the organizations that have actually helped the Black community, helped Black America to become a recognized nation within a nation. All the organizations that worked even prior to the Emancipation Proclamation, during slavery, post-slavery, during the Civil Rights Movement, these organizations were very instrumental in bringing life to Black America. And so these organizations I put in the book, is in order for us to get out of the situation and the condition that we're in, we need for these organizations to not only continue to do what they're doing, but to begin to specifically look at their history and basically everything that John Brinkley has said, to look at their history and then just to go back to the foundation, to the fundamental principles of the reasons these organizations began. And so looking at they actually have on this forum Greek letter, and so I have the Black Greek Letter organizations, understanding what their role is within the Black community, the Prince Hall Masons, what their role is, and then the Black Church, understanding their role. And every organization that existed back then, every organization that worked to help Black America to become a very independent, self-sufficient community, these organizations still exist today. And so what I put is that these organizations will just begin to address these issues and somehow not get misled or not get somehow bombarded with the idea of inner city youth or the idea of the minority or the idea of the Black and brown. Because it's when we look at what's going on, it's not, I would say from my perspective, it's not the Black and brown. It's the Blacks that need the help that these organizations existed to help. It's the Blacks that need the support. It's the Blacks that need the encouragement. And I know there are many of us who are doing well. However, on the same token and in the same line, there are many of us that still need that same support that existed back in the 1800s and the early 1900s. We still need that support from these organizations that still exist. And so that's what I'm looking at. So, and what we talked about, Daryl, is that having some type of town hall meeting where we can meet with these organizations and meet with the community to see what, you know, what these organizations are about and how they can actually contribute based upon their history, based upon the foundation, the objective of their existence, which is in essence the same thing that the Frontiers International are putting together this weekend. And if I had known in enough time, I would have made some changes. I would have bought, you know, had a plane ticket, and I would have been there in Plainfield, New Jersey to be at this event. Because when I looked at, well, what can we do? How can we help Black America? What do we need to get done? What organizations do we need? And so I looked at, you know, the Jewish community, what did they do, and how did they get from the Holocaust to being where they are today? What do we need to do? So I said, well, you know what? We need to have an organization. We need to have some organization that can lift us up, that can be the backbone, that can be the support. And as I looked to try to figure out how can we develop an organization, I began to realize that all the organizations that we need are already here. So we just need them to understand, you know, because there are so many who were at once a part of the organization, but for some reason became inactive or not involved in the organization. So these members need to be reclaimed. The objective needs and the mission needs to be revisited, and those who have been holding on just need to continue and be encouraged and not give up, because I believe that these organizations that existed then and still exist today will be the way that we get out of this situation. Well, in essence, will be the day that the crabs got out of our barrel.
Would you give a little explanation of that title and how you came up with that, how the day the crabs got out, and you have a subtitle, The Revival of Black America, and how those two tie in for the listeners that aren't familiar with the book.
Yes. Briefly, the day the crabs got out, hearing over and over again that Black people keep pulling each other down, we can never get on top, we can never become successful, because whenever someone becomes successful and they're moving up, someone always pulls them down, and then they will cap that and somehow conclude their statement by saying, we're just the crabs in the barrel. And so I looked at that, and I began to think, well, what would happen if we all got out of the barrel? And then how will we get out of the barrel? And so then looking at the Revival of Black America, all the organizations that existed, because we were in the barrel, the way that they got us to pull each other down was that process to enslave us. And so that whole enslavement process, that whole mentality and conditioning that they did to us to somehow turn us against us, to enslave us and to somehow keep us from becoming free and keep us to be excited to be, you know, a part of someone's, to be a house Negro and to be connected with the master. All these things were somehow keeping us in that barrel mentality. But when these organizations helped us to become awakened, or when they awakened us and helped us to see the light, when those organizations do the things that need to be done, Black America will be revived. And when Black America is revived, and when we become revived, and the organizations do all the things that need to be done, that will be the day that the crabs got out. And I believe that day is coming, especially with the event that's happening in Plainfield. I believe that day is coming, the day that we're going to get out of the barrel, the day that we'll stop pulling each other down, the day that we'll stop, you know, being, and someone said, our own worst enemy. Because, you know, there were times in which we would have the Klansmen would drive through our communities. They originated the drive-by shootings in Black neighborhoods. But somehow they conditioned us and tricked us and gave us this barrel mentality. So now we're doing the drive-bys. Now we're shooting each other up. You know, now we're attacking each other, which, you know, years ago it was the Klan we'd have to watch out for. But now they've somehow convinced us to be against us.
What do you think of, what is that? Give me an example of some of that somehow, if you will. We can peel that back a little bit without getting into too much minutia and detail. You know, because I hear that, you know, somehow they've gotten us to come on and just kill each other. Can you give some examples of what that somehow is? Is it the media? Is it individuals? Is it work environment? Is it impoverishment or all of the above? Or most, what carries the most weight of those things? Give us some perspective, please.
Sure. It's all of the above. All of the above. And in the city of Chicago, in the during the 60s and early 70s, we had the Black Panther Party, which came to Chicago. Honorable Fred Hampton was actually the chairman and organizing and putting the Black Panther Party together and speaking with many people to help Black community to be educated. And so one of the things that happened was that they would, you know, the FBI, the police, other informants, what they would do, they would get individuals from prison, they would give them some kind type of deal to somehow go into the Black Panther Party, become a member of the Black Panther Party, and give them all the information that's needed. And so in order to pull the Black Panther Party down, they had to use some of us to do that. And so when Honorable Fred Hampton was assassinated, somehow everything was already lined out, you know, where he slept, all, you know, all the details were there. In addition to that, we have the there are gangs here that were not initially gangs. At one point, they were community organizations. They were community protectors. You know, they were like the vanguard of the community, the Black Peace Stones. And so the Black Peace Stones were to maintain peace in our community. However, they were somehow conditioned to be against each other. They were conditioned to be against the Black Panthers. And so every organization that existed, community, you know, little small community organizations that existed, were somehow convinced to be against the other organization. And so that's the whole process of pulling each other down. And then this is then embellished through the media, through different forms of entertainment.
Talk a little bit about that, different forms of entertainment. Are you talking about those people who influence in a broad scale? Because entertainers and athletes, let's face it, influence on a broad scale because of the media attraction, and now the way sports and entertainment are, we're not dealing in small cafes, we're dealing in stadiums and and the like, and of course television media. So can you speak a little bit about that influence?
Yeah, one of the things that I was in reference to the media, some of the music that we listen to and some of the videos and some of the movies that are presented in a way that will show it's all within the Black community. And so it's the degradation of our women. It's the destruction of values, community values. It's the destruction of self and self-worth. And so all these things are presented through the media to pull us down and to somehow cause us to think less of ourselves. So
there's no coincidence. You're saying there's no coincidence that of all the things that could be promoted entertainment-wise, because there's some, amazing, entertainers. And I'll give you an example, the Grammys, for anyone that watched that or could stomach it, from my perspective. I couldn't stomach it, but so long. I didn't see any jazz. I saw hip-hop. I didn't see any R&B, frankly. I didn't even see any soul. Remember those kinds of genres? Does anyone listening remember those genres? What happened to that?
Right.
I'm just saying, I couldn't take it. And I don't believe that was a coincidence. What's your thought, Dr. Taylor? I mean, I could be wrong, but I really don't believe that's a coincidence.
It's not a coincidence. What is stated is that degradation sells, degradation primarily within the black community sells. Years ago, I heard that when Marvin Gaye, when he sang, his thing was, you sing love songs, you sing ballads, that's your thing. But there was too much going on in the black community. So Marvin Gaye, sang the song, What's Going On? And when he sang that song, there were problems because for them, that's not what we want you to sing. And so within our community today, songs like What's Going On, those are the type of songs, that would cause us to think and would open our eyes. Some of the music today, not all music, but some of the music, it may even be a small percentage of the music. It actually puts us to sleep. It closes our eyes. It causes us to be, bamboozled with everything that's happening and the things that are taking place within our community. And it supports it. It encourages it. And it promotes, all the things that would give us, that type of barrel mentality, the things that pull each other down, the things that hold us down.
Is it some or too much? And the other thing, I guess, I saw, it must have been ESPN on the sports channel, and they had a little series, and there was a question, should athletes be involved in politics? And I think back to, the Muhammad Ali's, if you will. I remember where it was a norm. It wasn't even a question of should there be. If you were black, you were black first, entertainer and athlete next. I mean, remember the Olympics,
right?
With the black power sign? It's as though the athletes and entertainers have become devoid of that. Now, there's some current music. When I talk about hip-hop or rap, there are some artists out that I believe have a conscience, and I don't listen to a lot, so I can't speak too much of it, but there are some out there. But you don't hear that being promoted so much. Again, you don't hear R&B, but there are R&B artists still singing, but they're not given any airtime on the major radio stations. They took
right.
our local. We had smooth jazz, and I've traveled a little bit, St. Louis and Kansas City, and Texas and Georgia, Florida, Michigan, Ohio. I've traveled a little bit, New York and so forth, Illinois, and most major metropolitans have what they call smooth jazz stations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in metropolitan New York, it was totally disgracefully just cut off. Just in the middle of one day, they just cut it. And the next thing you know, they were playing some sports channel on it. I mean, they just cut it. No, it's like, Negroes, you're finished. No more. And we even had a R&B oldies and goodies, oldies but goodies station. That just stopped one day. And this is Metro New York, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, top three largest metro next to your area where you are in Chicago and L.A., you know, and, of course, Houston. One of the top three or four metro areas. And they, with what I'm getting at is with all the money that's supposed to be out here, I mean, just Jay-Z and Beyonce alone got enough to get their own station. That we have no smooth jazz station out here at all.
Right.
None. So
yes,
it bodes to step back and think about what your book is about. The crabs in a barrel. No one's with any wherewithal. I don't have the wherewithal. If I did, if more people tuned in to Progressive News Weekly and we had thousands of listeners, maybe I could make a difference. We can go from hundreds to thousands. But there are those who have the wherewithal. Metro New York. I mean, we, you know, entertainers-wise at least, just in that. But there are also entrepreneurs that are doing very well. Metro is a lot of bucks out here. And no one found it within themselves to say, wait a minute. We're going to start another station. That's kind of scary. Not literally, but figuratively, because, folks, that's another thing. This revolution will not be televised. That's why one of the things of Progressive News Weekly is we keep it live. As Gil Scott Heron had, this revolution will not be televised. It has to be live. And that's what Dr. Taylor and John Brinkley are talking about with engaging these organizations. We've got to get live. And, again, repeat myself for the third time, imagine that. Imagine Metro Chicago. They're just cutting. I can't imagine it, or L.A., just cutting a station right in the middle of the day. And the next thing you know, you're hearing some pop or a sports channel. It would have been outrage. So I'm wondering if, as you said, we're being lulled to sleep. And the participants are those of our own color.
Right.
Because to not do something can also be to do something, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
If you're capable of doing something. And is that what you're talking about, to not do something? I mean, if we have organizations out here that are national organizations that were founded simply in uplifting the black community, then I guess we have to look at the barometer. The benchmark, not what you're doing, but in relation to what you are capable of doing and what you have done. I think that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and then, you know, just going back very briefly to when talking about the radio station, you know, Chicago, we had a radio station. It was jazz for years, maybe even decades. However, within one day, it became a Spanish station. And then a few months later, it became a country radio station, which it is today.
Wow.
You know, and so, you know, when we look at the challenges, you know, there's a lot of talk about the black and brown, you know, but it's important for black people to understand that we must help black people. When we divide our resources, divide our energy, divide our attention to the black and brown, the brown continue to excel. The brown, they don't have a high unemployment number, not as high as ours. We've always been double digit. The brown, they don't have the decay of their schools and the decay of their communities. Someone said, well, you haven't seen their communities. Well, here's what happens with their communities. You know, once somehow they move us out, the brown move in. But we somehow have been displaced all over again, and they're coming in. They're not being forced in, or they're not being somehow displaced in. They're moving in. And the places where we are the places that they look at as being run down. So we have to – it's very important that we take care of black people. The NAACP, that C means colored, and that colored was us when we were colored. Now we're African-American, we're black. But the NAACP exists for us. You know, their energy, their resources are now being distributed, you know, not just us. And we still need it. We still need the support. And so, yes, it's those not only who can do, but then what are you doing? And then how are you using your resources to help your purpose?
We need a strong black dialogue such as this one, Dr. Taylor. And I'm not trying to patronize you. I'm too old to play those kinds of games, and we've been knowing each other long enough. We've challenged each other as we need to as African-American men over the years. And so I'm saying all that to say that I take my hat off for what you just said, because what you just said, Dr. Taylor, and I'm going to put it out there for the – we got a – the lines are blowing off the hook here. I'm sure probably because a lot of folks like to – when you come on, Dr. Taylor, and we also have some local listeners that respect Mr. Brinkley. You said something that by some standards are out there. You people are grabbing their collars right now, you know, in some circles, saying, "I dare you," you know, differentiate black from brown. But I believe that dialogue has to happen. It really does. Like I said originally, early in the show, I'm not hating on anybody. I'm just loving on somebody.
Right,
and that's just the way it is. And until we grasp that, like I said, I'm not hating on anybody, and I can use that old phrase. Some of my best friends are, you know, Asian and Latino. I could throw that right out there.
Right.
I easily can. I remember when I first moved here, the first person I met, and to this day, are very, very close friends. But at the end of it, they respect me for my stance and who I am right now and where I stand. And the conversation that I'm having now, they respect that, and they say, do what you have to do, because they're doing what they have to do, believe me, in their communities.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I respect them for it. In fact, we need to take some pages off of their playbook.
Absolutely. That's right.
So this is that important dialogue that you're talking about. But with regard to the event, I would dare say that I think this may be the platform. I believe all things work for good with the faith and intention. So although we're having this forum here, and I would encourage forums across the country similarly, this is a precursor, I believe. We had little response from the Greek, religious, and partially because we put it together relatively quickly. I mean, you know, you're not talking months and months, we're talking weeks. And so I believe this might be an opportunity to have a discussion about doing a larger, because this isn't a town hall. I mean, it's been invited broadly. But I think we have an opportunity to perhaps establish something that you just spoke of, because hopefully we will get some representation from those various organizations. And if we can, perhaps we can broaden that to something the likes of what you are talking about. And I really encourage everyone to go out and get the book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. So with that said, I'll be at the event. I'm going to, even this week, and perhaps John and you and I can have some dialogue between over the next few days, Dr. Taylor, to see what we can work out. But as you have said earlier, in months and in the year past, this is something that you've made a commitment to. I take, again, my hat off to you for that. We need strong black leadership. It's critically needed. And you've been traveling, and I know you've shared that with me, to put your, you know, your feet where your mouth is, so to speak. And so I would encourage others to reach out to Dr. Taylor if you'd like to consider something similar. Did I put myself out there too much, Dr. Taylor, by saying that?
No, you're good.
My next statement is to say, can you share how, you know, individuals can reach out to you if they're interested in getting more information, having some dialogue with regard to the book, and so forth? I'm going to hand the mic over to you now.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So you can reach me at eddietaylorphd.com, and that's eddietaylorphd.com. And so on there is a link for contact information. You can send me an inquiry. You can send me a message, and you know my other information is on there as well. And so definitely eddietaylorphd.com, and that's www.eddietaylorphd.com.
All right. Well, as we come to the top of the hour, as I said, we would extend the program, and we have. So let's have some dialogue, and I think we've initiated what we've been talking about with this conversation today, and that is to engage. So what I'd like to do is discuss how we move forward with this panel discussions. You know, talk about these town hall meetings that, you know, hopefully will begin to happen across the country and significantly under your leadership. And we can use my radio program, and I know there are a few other progressive African-American-based programs out there as a catalyst. But let's put some meat and bones, some bones and meat around this topic and move forward with it so that it's not just conversation. And I also encourage everyone, as John suggested, to go to the two websites that he had mentioned, which I think were letsbuyblack365.com and Us Lifting Us. So with that said, I've gone over. I appreciate the extra time that you've shared with us. I'm going to look forward to, after the program, touching base with you, Dr. Taylor, to take next steps, because we are action-oriented. This isn't a conversation. It's too critical of a subject to make it just conversation. I'm going to close with something that came out, two things that came out this week. I won't say came out. They've been around forever in terms of at least one of them, and that's Maya Angelou. And she has a special on PBS, and it's basically a bio. And once you see it, it's a must for any, I believe, any library. I knew some things about, I can't even count how many of her books I have. I'm probably 9, I don't know. I try to get everything I can. But that was so inspiring for me, just to see what she went through. So I encourage everyone to look that up. Then the other thing that came out was the details of Tamir Rice. And that's near and dear to me, because those of you who've been listening to me or know me, I'm born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm a Cleveland inner city kid at heart, and always will be. That doesn't change. You know, you are what you are at heart. And they released the Tamir Rice videos, and it was just, you know, I was already had the hair raised on my neck, which hasn't come down since. But to see this boy targeted, he was literally targeted. The unedited version is out there, folks. Just like, you know, what happened in and around St. Louis, and the things that are happening right there in your neck of the woods in Chicago. You know, we can get details now in the technology of what we're dealing with. Michael Brown, Eric Gardner. I mean, I can go on and on. Folks, if this isn't enough for us to galvanize around the things that Dr. Taylor and John Brinkley are talking about, you have no soul. And I'm just blessed to have the listeners that are listening now who obviously do have souls. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. Let's blow this thing up, I mean, where we can make a difference. Because 100, 200 folks is not going to get it. We need thousands. So if you get a chance, it may be something you don't want to see, but you need to understand, because our Jewish brothers and sisters, and they are our brothers and sisters, as John said, we all started at our homeland, Ethiopia, But there, at the end of the day, they're all our brothers and sisters. And we need to acknowledge, look at what our Jewish brothers and sisters, when you think for a half a minute that what happened in the last 3 years under this black president, and I'm not blaming him, I'm just saying, don't think that was a coincidence. They wanted to make a point there. Don't think that would have happened. And what I saw, how they drove up, none of this, you know, we used to watch Car 54 when we were kids, and if there was a shootout, the first thing the cops would do was get behind the car, right? No, they came out blasting. Y'all know what I'm talking about. They came out blasting. I mean, what happened to the speaker? Okay, put your hands down. What happened to the microphone, the megaphone? No, these guys came out known that this kid had an issue in the community. I mean, he had some challenges, mental challenges. So they just came out and just shot him down dead. Folks, everybody has a Tamir life, a Tamir Rice in our life. Everybody on this call, every single one of us. If we can't stand up for some Tamir Rice in our life, then let's just fall over and roll over. I'm not. So I'm saying all that to get some momentum, because we never leave the show without giving something to inspire and encourage. In between the life of a Maya Angelou and the death of a Tamir Rice and the others I mentioned, let's make this thing happen. Let's do this thing. So next week, we'll be back, keeping it live, keeping it real. Hopefully the lines will blow off the chart, and we're going to make some momentum. Dr. Taylor, as he's very, very busy, may not be here with us, but he'll be in the background because he has made that commitment. I've known him for many, many years. This is a brother that doesn't, you know, just talk. He walks the talk. We have one question. Would you take a question before you leave the airways, Dr. Taylor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have 732. Hello? Okay, hello. Maybe not. Yeah, we don't do that. Okay, I have a 732-522 that had a pressing question, and I just went to the airways, and it looked like a lot of noise there. But if you're at that 732-522, this will be our – we have some other calls, but this will be our only call for tonight. I'm going to give you the mic. Okay. Did you want to ask a question?
On the table.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to move on. I just saw the lights come up on that number. So there's a couple others, but we're gonna take calls the next time. Dr. Taylor, thank you. I just, you know, that's all I can say. You really brought it home. John Brinkley, thank you. We're going to be dialoguing. There's a 718-338. Maybe I got that confused. 718-338.
Yes. Thank you for asking me in. I think you've mentioned the things that I was going to say, that in a lot of cases, everything is, you know, what the doctor has said is valid. But there's also a thing about oppression, and that comes from the state apparatus. And we have to be also conscious of that. And we can't just think that we keep ourselves down. It's not so much that we keep ourselves down. It's the matter of what the state apparatus does to us. So, I'm not saying that we don't do anything against each other. Yes, there are. But the point of it is, like, 80% of what happens to us is due to the state apparatus. Because, just like you said, the cop got out of his car shooting at the young boy that had something that looked like a gun. He didn't even, you know, find out whether it was not, all that stuff. And the various ones you named shows that there's a contention from the state apparatus also that we must first understand.
That's what I'm saying. I think the doctor had a good presentation. I think he does very positive things. I'm not knocking him from that. It's just that I want to insert the fact that we first have to understand the nature of an oppressive state, and that's what we live in. Okay?
Wow.
So
you know what?
That's what I wanted to say, just to emphasize what you have said yourself. Okay, Mr. Clark? Okay.
All right. We appreciate that. Is this Mr. Crenshaw out of New York?
Yes,
I recognize
Crenshaw.
The voice. Yes, thank you. One of our actual guest historians that comes on from time to time. But thank you for that comment. That would be our last comment. I see the hands now starting to come up, but we got to close out. We're approaching 8. Dr. Taylor, would you like to comment on that before we close out?
Oh, I'd say I appreciate your comment, and I agree with you with that as well. And so it is an oppressive state. And so what we look at from within the community, we have targets from both sides, so it's realistically, the state and many things that have happened after we were freed from slavery, things have been targeted towards us. But this new thing that has come up is somehow where at one point we felt safe. We'd run from the white neighborhood into the black neighborhood. But now we run from the white neighborhood to the black neighborhood and got to run while we're in the black neighborhood. And so there's so many things that are happening, and it's not necessarily us against us, but it's the mental conditioning that somehow we've been, some of us have been confused into thinking that we're the enemy, and that's, what we need to just wake up from that. And we're not the enemy. In order for us to stand, to have a united front, we need to be able to just stand together. Jesus Christ himself said that any kingdom that's divided will not stand. So we have to be able to come together. In order for us to have a united march, we had a march in 95, a march in 63, but we have to be united. We have to be able to come together to say that we as a people, we all rise up as a people. And I think that's important to deal with the oppressive state and the condition that the oppressor continues to put us in. In psychology, there is a term, an idea of identifying with the aggressor. There's the idea and the concept that some may have identified with the aggressor. The way that the aggressor and the oppressor, has treated us, somehow we have identified with them.
Wow. Whoa, that's deep. Well, we got to pick up on that one, Dr. Taylor. That you put on your psychologist hat on us. That was beautiful. That's a beautiful close. I'm going to be reaching out to you, if not right after the program, in the next day or so, because we got to pick up. We got to keep the momentum going. The lines are blowing up. People, not everybody wants to, call in, but we're at the top of the hour. Dr. Taylor will be coming back hopefully shortly in the weeks ahead. And bottom line is we are in this together. And we got to love our brothers and sisters outside of, our diaspora, but we got to love ourselves first and foremost, because we got a generation and generations to look back at and to look forward to, and that's what everyone else is doing. So, as I said, we're all in this love together. Thank you for tuning in to Progressive News Weekly. Thank you for Dr. Eddie Taylor. If you tuned in late, you've got to go to the archives because this one was off the charts. John Brinkley of the Frontiers was on, one of the chairpersons of the Frontiers International, and we had numerous callers, so this was an excellent program. We look forward to next Thursday, same time, same place. And, yes, we are in this love together. So we're going to close out with Mr. Al Jarreau, who passed about a week ago. And, boy, he's one of my mainstays. Talk about some R&B and keeping it real that they don't even do on the Grammys anymore, which I'm basically boycotting from here on out. We're just going to close out on one of my favorite tunes that he did. So with that said, peace and blessings to all. Thank you again, Dr. Taylor. Thank you, Mr. John Brinkley. Thank you for all the callers and all the listeners. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly, Thursday, 6:30 to 7:30 or thereabout, where we keep it real, keep it live, news for you, by you, and of you. God bless. We
every time we hear the music and feel it's this love together. We got the kind that lasts forever. Yes.